We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. The name Parkland, like so many other American cities, has become synonymous with school shootings. But in many ways, Parkland was different from those that had come before it. While students and families were in shock, they were also angry, they were activated, and they took action. Reporting on the event continued long after the national news networks had left Broward County. And the work of activists and journalists who continued to investigate what happened led to real change. This year, journalists at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel were awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Public Service. Brittany Wallman and Randy Roguski were both members of that team, and they were in Milwaukee for Marquette University's annual Burleigh Media Ethics Lecture. They spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers and explained what their experience was like with this kind of reporting before Parkland.
We had had a mass shooting at the airport in Broward County, so that was not too long before the Parkland shooting. So we actually had some recent experience with it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the most similar event. You know, gun violence is part of a lot of what we do now. We're a pretty large population area, and we're reporting on gun crime a lot, but certainly nothing like this.
Yeah, what made this different from things you'd seen in the past?
We had never had a school shooting, for sure. And so as soon as there were reports that there might be a school shooting, everybody was tuned right in. And the whole newsroom, you know, we're used to covering big events. Like hurricanes that require the entire staff. But in this case, you know, everyone from sports to features to Metro, everybody just sort of self-assigned and jumped on this story because it was ticking across CNN and Vox and MSNBC. And, you know, we could see that it was going to be a big deal.
You know, for someone like me who works in journalism but works in kind of a very different part of it, I don't work in breaking news, these stories always seem so daunting, both physically and emotionally. As those first moments are really playing out, what is that like?
You know, I think when these happen, this happened at the airport too, when they first happen, you just sort of hope it's not going to be the scale it is. And then as it starts to evolve, this newsroom in particular, I think, just rallies. I mean, it really, everybody just pitched in and wanted to do whatever they could to help report this story. It involved the entire staff, every single person on the story for a while, you know, for a number of weeks, because it was so competitive. I mean, there were media from all over the world just streaming into town to cover this thing.
It was very sad to cover. I mean, you know, as journalists, we're supposed to be detached and neutral, but we were just immersed in so much sadness and the community's grief. And one of the things that really helped was other newsrooms sent us food and you know, one newsroom, you know, somewhere else in the country paid a bar tab for us. And, you know, because we were there from morning till night, and it was just so, that really helped a lot. It was, you know.
That was Las Vegas, wasn't it?
That sent us
the
bar tab.
I mean, there's this, unfortunately, this club of newsrooms. And then when it happens to another newsroom, then you sort of pay it forward.
Yeah.
And we did the same for other newsrooms that ended up having shootings.
It's terrible. One day the therapy dogs came in, and we needed it, you know, because this was a story that we knew that we were going to have to live with for a long time. We're still covering it. And, you know, we see the profound impacts of it on our social media every day, you know, parents posting photos of their dead children and that sort of thing. So just, and then of course there were people that, you know, I have a daughter that goes to high school in Broward, and other people had friends that lived in Parkland or went to that school. So initially it was just, it reminded me of, you know, on a much smaller scale, of course, but after 9/11, how every day you watch TV and you're just in tears and like, oh, this is heart-wrenching. And it was like that.
In that same vein, a lot of what journalists have to do in these moments is talk to people who have just gone through the worst trauma of their lives. How do you navigate that, especially when you're dealing with not just people who have gone through a huge amount of trauma, but children?
Well, this was sort of unusual in that, you know, so many people that were directly impacted by this channeled their grief into activism. And so, you know, that gave us a different direction to head in with some of these parents. But I still think about, you know, some of the people that, you know, there are the ones that we're all familiar with now. But, you know, what about the wife that we've almost never seen, or the dad that isn't on TV all the time, or the siblings? You know, there are so many. We went to funerals and talked to a lot of people that just didn't even know how to deal with their grief at the time. I don't know. It's hard. It's a difficult. Never gets any easier. I don't know what the right answer is on how you approach something that sad, because it's not just their own child that they've lost. It's part of this huge, terrible tragedy where 17 people died.
I think that's a good point about the activism and also about the response to trying to get answers to what went wrong in this, that there wasn't as much reluctance to talk to us as what you might expect in a lot of cases like this. And, you know, most of the funerals even were open to the public. There were a couple of them. They asked us, you know, to keep our distance, which, of course, we did. But for the most part, it wasn't banging on doors where people didn't want to talk to you.
That's true. And, you know, that reminds me, the school district put out something early on urging the media to basically not bother the families. And that was so incorrect, because in this case, they had something to say, and they were happy to have us paying attention. They still are. They've been some of our biggest supporters.
Yeah, the people that didn't want to speak to us were public officials.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems like there may have been a reason for that.
Right.
Yes.
So much of your work was really looking at what went wrong before so much went wrong. And you dug into a lot of different things. You know, your work found systemic failures on the part of the school, social workers, law enforcement. What happened in the case of the school? Can you unpack that a bit?
Oh, my. Where do you start? You know, this particular kid had tremendous problems in the school district. And I think the more that Brittany and our other reporters dug, they found more and more of that. So some of it involved the school district mishandling this particular troubled kid. But there were other things where security wasn't handled well. And we found examples where school districts really all over the state were not reporting to the state the crimes that were occurring on campus. So there was a whole scope of things that had been done wrong that we were able to bring out.
That they didn't want us to bring out. You know, the school district really fought. They still haven't changed at all.
No, they have not changed. And they, at the very beginning, just the first days, they stated, we are not going to release any documents whatsoever related to Parkland, which is clearly a violation of open records laws in Florida. But that was sort of their tact from the very beginning, is we're going to just recluse into our shell, and that way you'll never find out the truth.
They really became—they were just instantly defensive rather than saying, you know, okay, we want to know what went wrong also, because we want to prevent something like this from happening again. Nicholas Cruz is not the only child like that in the Broward school system or in any other school district. So it really just always boggled my mind why they seemed to take it so personally that we were doing our job.
Well, and it seems like there had been a lot of warning signs beforehand that were just kind of, you know, put under the table and not thought about. But it is always distressing when you have a school district that's just gone through, I mean, a catastrophic event, and their initial reaction is, well, let's not think too much about it.
Yeah, it doesn't give you confidence as a parent. And, you know, we've heard from a lot of parents that are concerned, because if you have the school district saying, well, there's nothing to see here, boy, that terrible Sun Sentinel is just trying to, you know, make us look bad. Everybody knows that that's not the case. You know, it's a big school district, and, you know, of course they're not perfect. And when you have a troubled child like this, it's hard to educate somebody that has mental issues and learning disabilities. You know, they didn't get it right in this case, but we thought that it was important to really dig into the details and figure out, well, what does getting it right look like?
Well, the attitude of the Broward County School Board may not have changed, but a lot has changed as a result of your reporting. What was its impact on the community? I mean, you did so many pieces, so I know this is a little unwieldy, but what was that impact?
Well, yeah, one of the stories that we did at the end of the year was, you know, we convened and said, well, we want to be productive. You know, we didn't want to just write stories just to write stories, and so we just tried to tick through a list of all of the things that have been changed to prevent another school shooting and what was left undone. And it is hard to wrap your arms around it, but there were changes in gun access to guns, the ability of law enforcement to take guns away from somebody who seems like they might be dangerous. That's huge. The extreme risk protection orders that are now being discussed in Congress. The sheriff was removed and replaced with a different sheriff. There's certainly, I would say, there was so much focus on the fact that deputies did not run in to try to save children that just in law enforcement, I think it's now clear that that is what the public expects. And there's been a lot of discussion and work in mental health. What do we need to do in the schools to provide services for kids that are not, you know, mentally healthy?
Yeah, and I think at this case even, you know, the legislature took a lot of action. The age to buy a gun in Florida was increased. There were a lot of requirements put on schools to have more armed security on campus. But it even went beyond that because one of the stories we did found that the FBI had dismissed two tips about this person. So we looked at how does that happen? You know, the FBI is supposed to be protecting everyone in the country. And the FBI made changes as well in the way that they hire people and evaluate them as a result of what went wrong in this case.
Now, this is a much more kind of technical question, but, you know, something you mentioned at the beginning, which I think is true for most of these situations, the national news, the international news in some cases really descended on your area, which is your beat, your community, the place that you are not only reporting on but also a member of. What is your advice for other newsrooms, other news organizations who experience a similar kind of situation where there's all of this national press, all of these people who are talking about your community? Where do you fit into that?
I think you have to be clear about what it is you want to accomplish. You know, the national media was largely focused on these Douglas kids who had become advocates for registering voters and young people voting and gun control and things. They focused on them quite a bit. They focused a lot on the gun issues. We felt, as a local newsroom, that there were important things like we were just discussing about what went wrong here and what needs to be improved and how can we keep this from happening again. That when you ask what advice would I give another newsroom, that's what it is that pick what your focus is going to be, decide what is most important for your community. And, you know, don't just flow with the river the way it goes.
And initially, you know, of course, it made it difficult for us to get our calls returned because someone, you know, would say, well, I have to call back the New York Times and or go on national television. And
particularly the kids, these kids, these high school kids were courted by the national media, and you know, if CNN's calling, you're probably going to call them back and not the Sun Sentinel.
But we reminded people, you know, they're going to leave town, and we are going to be here to tell your story for as long as it takes. And so, you know, we just really nurtured relationships with sources and with, you know, people impacted, and tried to not get swept up in the current, as he's talking about, with what national media was focused on. And eventually they did, you know, go away.
I mean, we had a conscious decision one day about how much effort do we want to put into the whole gun debate, because we could do things like we did that could actually have an effect, or you can rehash the gun debate, which is never going to change, and, you know, what better served our readers. And I think the path we took was more beneficial to our community.
Brittany Wallman is an investigative reporter, and Randy Roguski is the Metro editor at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. They were both part of the team of journalists who covered the aftermath of the mass shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. The team received the Pulitzer Prize for Public Service for their work. Wallman and Roguski spoke with Lake Effect's Troy Powers while they were in Milwaukee for Marquette University's annual Burleigh Media Ethics Lecture.